Fasten your seatbelt and turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip. Welcome to Route 51, Regional Talk Radio for North Central Wisconsin. I'm Glenn Moberg, and today we are exploring the world of opera for those who love it, but mostly for those of you who know nothing about it or have been intimidated by it as a musical and theatrical art form. What you're hearing right now, the William Tell Overture by Rossini. It's one of the most familiar pieces of music in America today. The television theme for The Lone Ranger, used in countless other applications in our modern pop culture. What you may not know is that this piece of music, the William Tell Overture, is opera. And opera, as you're about to find out, is entertainment for the masses. In fact, it is one of the first forms of mass entertainment to emerge after the Middle Ages in Western Europe. Our guest today in our Wausau studio, George Tepping, the executive director of the Wausau Conservatory of Music. He is also a tenor who has performed for years in the opera houses of Austria and Germany, and who has sung in 22 different operas during his career. Joining us today on a direct line from our Madison studio, Wisconsin Public Radio classical music host Lori Skelton, who knows a lot more about this subject than I do. She, too, is a singer with opera experience who is currently performing as a mezzo-soprano with the Milwaukee Symphony Chorus. And we're going to be playing excerpts from some of the world's great operas, and we also want to hear from you. Do you love opera? Or if you don't, why not? Our lines are open at 261-6371. If you're in the Wausau area, that's 261-6371 or 1-800-780-9742 if you're calling for anywhere within our listening area. That's 1-800-780-9742. George Tepping, Lori Skelton, welcome to Route 51. Thanks for being with us today.
Thank you.
It is a pleasure to be here.
Lori, why should anybody living in America today care about opera?
Well, anyone in America who is caught up in things that are bigger than your day-to-day existence, whether it's a reality show where you're racing over the globe, or whether it's, you know, gee, I'd really like to try rock climbing one of these days. Opera is something that is bigger than your everyday existence. There's a reason that you call it grand opera. When someone comes to the footlights and spends 4 minutes declaiming in beautiful Italian why they love the person on the other side of the stage, you are just lifted. It is this huge swell of emotion that you just can't ignore. And it doesn't matter if you don't understand every single word in a language that may not be your own. You recognize the emotion. You recognize that power. And if you're looking for the next big thing, I think opera is it.
George Tepping, is it the next big thing?
Well, I don't know if it's the next big thing, but it has been around for almost 500 years. And it's one of the big things, certainly in the western part of Europe.
Well, it's been a big thing in your life, George. You grew up in Ohio. You went to school in Iowa. How did you end up in Austria and Germany?
Well, after I finished my master's degree in music, I decided I really wanted to try and pursue a career singing opera. And in the German-speaking countries, that's where you needed to go. There were more opportunities there than there were in the United States. There were over 90 opera houses that had full-year type of contracts, seasons that were available. And in the United States, we had only one, the Metropolitan Opera in New York.
Now, is this because the art form grew up in Europe? Is that the primary reason why it just isn't as popular in America?
Well, perhaps it is. One of the things is that it almost every town in small town, large town, whether it's the size of Wausau, whether it's the size of New York, has an opera company. And so there are so many opportunities to hear it. It's actually it's less expensive to go to the opera than it is to go to a movie.
Well, there you go. One of the people who really popularized this art form, Lori, was Luciano Pavarotti. And I'm going to start with a clip of his, just because he made this art form so accessible to so many people. Why don't you set this up for us? It's off of...
La Donna Immobile.
That's it.
And it's an interesting little twist. Here we have in Rigoletto, the Duke of Mantua, who was singing La Donna è Mobile, women are fickle. But the twist that the audience knows is that it's the Duke who is the womanizer. It's the Duke who is constantly changing girlfriends, so it's really he's the one who's fickle. It's a melody that a lot of people will recognize, and to have Pavarotti sing it, for many, this is what opera sounds like.
This is the tenor aria from Rigoletto by Verdi.
È sempre misero chi a lei s'affida, chi le confida, mal cauto il cuore, pur mai non sentesi felice appieno, chi in su quel seno non gli valore. La donna è mobile, fa più male vento, muta l'accento ed il pensiero. Ed il pensiero.
My, I wish when
How
I'm in the
sh- not call that thrilling.
I wish when I'm in the shower I could sound like that.
You probably do. The one of the lovely things about singing in the shower is the acoustics are great. I think we all sound better in the shower.
Believe me, I don't sound like that, Lori. But when Pavarotti passed away, it was really, really a big deal.
Oh, very much so.
I agree, very much so. He was really one of the preeminent tenors of the late 20th century.
Not just because he had a grand voice, but because he had a grand manner, a wonderful, expansive personality that really did include everybody under the umbrella of opera. I think a lot of people felt that opera was approachable when he was singing it.
And that was his character really did help popularize it as an art form. And you know, we see that in other musical art forms, too, where certain people are able to spread something to a mass audience. But that voice of his, Lori, it was certainly something that was made to project, even without amplification, from the stage all the way back into the furthest recesses of the auditorium.
Which certainly has a little bit to do with what you're born with, but as George will attest, you don't get that kind of power and that kind of control without a great deal of work.
Well, George, tell us about that.
Well, indeed. And, of course, in most opera houses, they don't use amplification. And so we all rely upon just our own voices to project all the way out to the back row. And, of course, we're always told that the back row people, even though those are probably some of the cheapest seats, are also paying money to hear us. So it is a matter of expanding yourself to that extent. But it takes a great deal of compression of sound. It's singing is really a sport. I always, when I talk with my students, I talk about how much it is very much like running a marathon.
Well, it's physically demanding, too, because and nobody would know that better than you, having done it for so many years in the opera houses in Austria and Germany, but those lights have to be hot, for one thing.
The lights are very hot. Often, in some of the operas, for instance, some Wagner operas, Die Meistersinger lasts about 4.5 hours in many productions, and you're on stage an awful long time under those lights. You basically get rid of about 8 pounds of water.
And the costumes you're wearing, they're not made out of polyester.
No, indeed. And, of course, many of these operas are situated in royalty and in the courts, and so you have these very, very heavy costumes. I was very lucky in that my roles didn't have as splendiferous costumes, but some of the women who have to carry around 30 pounds of costume, it really takes a tremendous amount of effort.
And there's not only singing, you're also acting. There are narrative parts, and there are some pretty demanding physical things you've got to do.
Well, it is a sport of multitasking. Not only do you worry about the music, but your own notes, but also that you are coordinating with the orchestra and the conductor. You worry about the language, what it means. You worry about where you are on the stage so you don't trip over your feet. It's not a sport for people who cannot walk and chew gum at the same time.
George, you told me that for somebody who's a novice, who doesn't know about opera, probably the most accessible opera is Carmen.
That's, in my opinion, it is. I think it is. It's just a wonderful opera for people to start getting exposed to opera. To go to a stage performance of an opera is certainly the best way, obviously, to get to see it, because opera is a theater, and so you need to be able to see the visual aspects of it. But Carmen has a wonderful story. It has delightful music. It has some wonderful characters in the opera, and so you get this whole picture of really what opera is. And, of course, if you can, whether you're hearing it in the original French or whether you're hearing it in a translation, it is just a charming way to get experience in opera.
Let's play a clip from Carmen. This is from Act Two. It's what's commonly known as the Toreador song. Laurie Skelton, your analysis of that piece, and before we go further, I want to thank you for picking out all of these excerpts and editing them for us. You just did a wonderful job.
Well, the Toreador, coming into the arena, singing of glory and how the women will be falling in love with you. I love that strut in the orchestra. It's like Tony Manero at the start of Saturday Night Fever. I mean, this guy is just dripping with testosterone. And you can't take your eyes off him. I've done a performance, a stage performance. We didn't do a lot of costumes or a lot of scenery. But, man, when Escamillo comes on stage, every eye is on him. This is incredibly sexy and powerful. And, yeah, you're drawn to it.
And people who aren't into opera would not usually apply adjectives like sexy and powerful to this.
Oh, heavens, opera is so sexy. Again, it's you've got these huge emotions, all this power and intensity. You don't go into an opera house and say, yeah, I like you. You say, I love you, or I hate you, I can't stand you. There's nothing small about it.
It certainly gets your blood moving, and it sort of reminds me, that particular piece from Carmen's almost reminds me of a Sousa march. It's the type of thing I think if you probably looked around at people's feet, I can't imagine that anybody's foot is not tapping along with that music.
Well, we're going to play a piece from The Carmen of Carmen. But before we do that, we've got to take a short break. We'll be back in just a bit with George Tepping and Laurie Skelton talking about opera. I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio on the Ideas Network.
Support for Wisconsin Public Radio comes from UMR, providing employee benefits administration, integrated health management, and pharmacy benefits administration for self-funded employers throughout the U.S. More about UMR at umr.com.
Laurie Skelton, tell us about Habanera.
This is how we're introduced to Carmen. We've already heard about her by this point in the opera. We know she's a gypsy, kind of an itinerant cigarette girl. She has stabbed one of her co-workers, a bit of jealousy among the women in the cigarette factory. And when Carmen comes on stage, the men are all, "Carmen, when will you love us? When will you look at me?" And she's basically saying, "Look, love is rebellious. Love can't be contained. I'm not going to tie myself down. No matter how sexy you think I am still mistress of my own destiny." So
love is a rebellious bird.
It's bird, yes.
Part of the power of opera is its incredible dynamic range. I'm just watching the VU meter here, and it's barely registering, and then suddenly I'm way in the red when you hit those emphatic points in that piece. Laurie, when Carmen came out, and I think you can hear kind of the sultry overtones of that song, it was viewed by a lot of critics as being kind of vulgar, women smoking on stage and all of this other stuff.
Well, Carmen does not conform to anyone's convention. She is, as she says, "I am my own person. I decide my fate." And yes, in the early part of the 19th century, that was a little bit of a radical notion for many.
Still kind of a radical notion for some people. Just watch the news at night.
But I think it's one of the reasons why Carmen has endured, why we all love her so much. At the very end of the opera, she says, "Look, go ahead and kill me. I am not renouncing my beliefs."
And George,
we appreciate that strength.
George, you feel that this is really the opera that is most accessible to the modern palate.
Well, I think so. And again, as I mentioned before, because of the wonderful melodies, almost to the point where the audience goes out humming the melodies, but it's a wonderfully active opera, so that there's a lot of action going on stage. There's a wonderful chorus that one gets to hear, so that you hear a wonderful variety of marching type of music, of just gorgeous music. You've got all sorts of intrigues of love and hate, and you've got robbers, and there's all sorts of things going on. So I find it's just a wonderful way to introduce yourself to opera.
And as I understand it, this is something that really took off after the death of the composer. Georges Bizet, when he died in France, died a very bitter, broken man because many of his works just weren't as popular as he thought they should be.
But not only with Bizet, but unfortunately that seems to be the history of music. It takes a while for people to learn how good a particular work is and to really relate to it.
If you just joined us, we're talking to George Tepping, the executive director of the Wausau Conservatory of Music, an opera singer who has performed in... how many operas have you sung in?
22 different operas.
How many performances?
Well over 1,100.
And Laurie Skelton, classical music host with Wisconsin Public Radio. She's joining us from Madison. We don't have any phone calls yet, so we want you to call us, 261-6371 or 1-800-780-9742. That's 261-6371 if you're in the Wausau area, or 1-800-780-9742. I know this is kind of an unusual topic, but we want to hear why you love opera. Or if you appreciate what George is doing at the Wausau Conservatory, you can give us a call in that direction, too, and let us know how important the fine arts are to you. And, Laurie, let me ask you what you would say to people who are listening right now who may be intimidated by this art form.
Well, the aria we just heard, I heard for the first time when it was featured on The Odd Couple in 1974. Marilyn Horne was a guest star. The plot line had to do with Felix Unger staging an opera and looking for the perfect woman to sing Carmen. I found that just that aria in the middle of The Odd Couple to be incredibly intriguing. And apparently I wasn't the only one.
And in the plot line, she could only sing it to Oscar because she had a crush on him.
She had a crush on
Felix.
Him. Right. She could only sing it to Oscar. She had a crush on him.
261-6371, 1-800-780-9742. We got a break for news. We'll be back in just a few minutes with more of the World of Opera.
WPR.org's audio archive makes it easy to listen to our programs whenever you want to. Every day, many programs are saved, so you can catch something you missed, or you can just listen again. Visit WPR.org and click on Audio Archives.
We're back on Route 51 Regional Talk Radio on the Ideas Network, and we are talking about the world of opera with George Tepping, the executive director of the Wausau Conservatory of Music, and Laurie Skelton, Wisconsin Public Radio's own classical music host, joining us from a very good line that we've got set up with our studio in Madison. What we are listening to right now, of course, is Wagner, the Ride of the Valkyries, which, George, as I understand it, evokes a lot of cliches about opera.
Oh, certainly. When one thinks of this, one thinks of, if you'll excuse me for saying it, the fat lady with the horned type of helmet and the long braids. And of course, certainly that has changed a little bit as far as what normally one finds as a Wagnerian soprano presently.
And Laurie, you were telling me before the show that the fat lady doesn't always sing in opera anymore.
Well,
we've got somebody named Daniel Denise.
Oh, heavens, yes. Who we currently have a link to her on the classical music on WPR page at Facebook. There was a big article about her in the New York Times this past Sunday. Danielle Denise has just turned 30. She is utterly gorgeous. I think she's a size 6. She's incredibly tiny, big, gorgeous, dark eyes, long dark hair, and this incredible voice. We're certainly concerned about weight because, as George has said, singing opera is a sport. You are using your body And while, yes, some physical types, you know, certainly anyone with a barrel chest might have an easier time of it, so there you've got maybe a slightly larger than normal frame at work, it's not about the fat lady singing. It's about someone who is able to connect on an artistic level, on an emotional level, who has the intelligence to be a stage presence as well as someone who is so good about crafting their individual instrument. And yes, you are seeing more and more opera people are certainly aware that this is a visual medium, and yeah, we're starting to cast people who would not look out of place on the cover of People magazine.
And George, if you were performing Wagner, I mean, that is really a marathon, to use that sports analogy again.
Well, of course, I didn't have the opportunity to do anything from the Ring cycle from which the Rite of the Valkyries takes place. The Wagner that I had the opportunity of doing was from Der Meistersinger, to do the part of David, who is the apprentice to Hans Sachs. And I was on stage approximately 4 hours of every performance. And not that I was singing the entire time, but there was an awful lot of effort just to remain there and remain in character and to do all of the business that has been blocked and to assist the lead artist, mm-hmm. the Hans Sachs artist. You sort of follow him around and do everything that an apprentice would do.
And it's, boy, it's quite an art form. We do want to hear from you. Let me give you those phone numbers again, 261-6371 or 1-800-780-9742. What's your favorite opera? If you don't like opera, if you're intimidated by it, tell us why. There's one young lady who is definitely not intimidated by opera. In fact, she's an opera singer. Her name is Sally Stevens, and she grew up in Wausau, and she's now performing in German opera houses. So in that sense, George, her experience kind of follows right along with yours. But we did have a chance to talk to her last week when she was in town. She's back in Germany now. And this is what Sally Stevens had to say about growing up in Wausau and becoming a professional opera singer.
Well, I was lucky that my parents played classical music at home. So I was exposed to it from the very beginning. And I was also lucky because the church we went to and still do, the Unitarian Universalist Church of Wausau, had a children's choir. And the choir director and the organist, husband and wife, Maurice and Juliana Nord, they recognized my talent at a very early age. At the age of 5, I sang my first solo. And I knew from that moment on I wanted to be a singer.
And where did your career path take you from Wausau?
Well, I won first place in the regional Metropolitan Opera competition and went to New York and sang on the Metropolitan Opera stage in the competition. And that gave me confidence to move to New York City. And so I lived there for 3 years and tried to start my career there. It's very difficult there. The competition is great. So then I decided to move to Europe because I was told that in Germany, Switzerland, and Austria, you can get a contract with an opera house, get a monthly salary, and sing a lot of opera roles.
What can you tell Americans who might not know anything about opera music why they should be interested in this art form?
It's a combination of voice, instruments, the music, acting, the theater, beautiful costumes, beautiful scenery. It's just a combination of so many different art forms that it can be a unique experience.
This is mass entertainment.
I encourage anyone to just try going to an opera and opening your mind to a new experience and letting the emotions flow over you.
Well, let's let some emotions flow over us. This is Sally Stevens performing a piece by Mozart, Porgy Amore, from The Marriage of Figaro.
Thank you.
George Tepping is somebody who is the executive director of the Wausau Conservatory. It must make you feel good that somebody from the city of Wausau can go on to have a professional career in this medium.
Indeed. And also, the conservatory was very fortunate to have Sally on our faculty, on our voice faculty, for one summer when she happened to be back in the country. We needed another voice teacher, and so I was very lucky to be able to get her to work with some singers.
Lori, the Figaro is somebody who shows up a number of times in the operatic world.
Well, certainly the Mozart's Marriage of Figaro. We just heard an excerpt from that opera. And then Rossini's Barber of Seville has the character of Figaro as well. Figaro is, in The Barber of Seville, he is the barber, but he is the person that everybody comes to get stuff done. He is the deal maker. He makes things happen. And when we get to The Marriage of Figaro, a few years have passed, but he is still out to make certain everything goes the way it's supposed to, and certainly to make him come out on top. He's a delightful character. And whether it's the Rossini or the Mozart treatment, he is a delight to watch as well as listen to in opera.
Well, we've got a clip from the Rossini treatment. Why don't you set that up for us?
Here we have, again, something that I think a lot of people will recognize, the Figaro, Figaro aria, where he comes out and makes that entrance and says, yes, I am the barber, I am the one who's in charge here. And he goes on, you'll hear the different voices that he puts on, all of these different people who are calling on his services. Cheryl Milnes is singing this, and this is my particular favorite recording, just because he does have so much fun with it. You really hear the character, even though you can't see him. Rossini's Figaro. I'm Glenn Moberg. You're listening to Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. Our phone number is again 2616371 or 1-800-780-9742. Do you like opera? If so, why? And if you don't, why not? Lori Skelton, Wisconsin Public Radio music host, and George Tepping of the Wausau Conservatory of Music. And George and Lori, one thing that all of these pieces have in common that we've listened to so far, they're all in a foreign language, you know. And maybe if we had more operas in English, it would be more accessible to the American audience, because as we all know, Americans just don't know foreign languages.
Well, of course, in the United States, there are still operas performed in English. There's some wonderful translations of the Rossini, actually, and also the Mozart operas. But also, now we've gotten technical in the United States, and they have what are called super titles. And one can see a projection of what is going on, actually what is being said above the stage. It's projected on a space. I find it a little bit confusing because your eyes start to follow that, but it does give you an idea of what is going on. I've always been told by my teachers that really, before you go to the opera, you need to do a little bit of homework. Read the story, find out who the characters are and what is sort of the plot, so that way then you have an idea of what is going on, even if you don't happen to speak the language.
But it would seem like those super titles would really be distracting. You want to focus your attention on the costumes and the acting and the pageantry that's going on stage, and instead you're looking up in the sky to see the words scrolling by.
Well, I suppose those of us who are purists don't like the super titles. I think we prefer to do the homework, particularly if it's an opera that in a language that you don't speak, and find out exactly what's going on. But you can follow along, and even your vision will get split so that mm-hmm. you're not just looking at that and ignoring what's going on stage.
I'll tell you something. There are a lot of us who are in the news business who are purists about those crawls that you see on all the news shows right now. We want your attention on the images that our photographers have taken instead of being distracted by what the Dow Jones is doing. And so, you know, it would be a similar thing, I think.
Well, I think those of us who happen to be on stage would prefer that you're paying attention to us rather than what is crawling across the top of the proscenium of the theater.
My personal bias on that with the Milwaukee Symphony Chorus, they used to print translations when we'd be singing in a foreign language, and now we are using supertitles. And I've got to tell you, as a performer, when you hear 2,000 people turning a page all at the same time because they're following the words on their laps rather than, again, taking in the whole big experience and watching what's going on, that can be a little disconcerting. If I can put in a plug for Figaro, there is one of my favorite opera companies in Milwaukee, the Skylight Opera Theater. For their 50th anniversary season coming up, they are going to be doing both the Rossini, Barber of Seville, and the Mozart, Marriage of Figaro, in English. They do have wonderful English translations. Everything Skylight does is in English. So if you feel like making a pilgrimage to Milwaukee to take in some really good English language opera, Skylight is the place to go.
Lori Skelton and George Tepping. I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. We're talking about opera. We'll be back with more after this.
Support for Wisconsin Public Radio comes from UMR, providing Employee Benefits Administration, Integrated Health Management, and Pharmacy Benefits Administration for self-funded employers throughout the U.S. More about UMR at umr.com.
Lori Skelton, George Tepping. We're talking about opera. And we have a couple of excerpts from La Boheme. Lori, why don't you set these up for us?
This is a love story. And for Rodolfo and Mimi, they meet, and it's love at first sight. But, of course, this is opera. So it's not just about them seeing one another. It's about them singing to one another. And these are the first things that they sing to say who they are and how much they are moved by this person opposite them.
Che gelida manina, se la lasci riscaldar, cercar che giova, al buio non si trova. Le dirò con due parole che
And, of course, Lori, in a love story, you have to hear not just from the male point of view. Let's play this this next selection featuring Mimi, the soprano aria from La Bohème by Puccini. Two selections from the opera La Bohème by Puccini. Why is this piece of art significant, Lori?
I think ultimately it comes down to that incredible love story. I think for a lot of people it also, even if we didn't live the life of the starving artist in an attic when we were just out of college, I think there is a romance about that idea of being so very young and having great dreams of making a difference in the world, and that first rush of really incredible love. Whether or not we've suffered or starved for our art, I think we all can relate to what that youthful hopefulness is like.
The beauty of the voices that we just heard. Now, in opera, there is a category for every type of voice, isn't there, George Tepping?
Yes, there is. Of course, the Germans, being as organized as they are, have a system called the Fox system. Literally, that sort of means the compartmentalized or the pigeonholed system, if you will. And what they've done is that they have taken voices, they've divided them into five different areas, five different categories: soprano, mezzo soprano, tenor, baritone, bass, and then they've subdivided those. And what they have done is they have taken a look at virtually every opera role that exists in every opera and figured out where they think it belongs. It has, and this was done basically, I think, to make it a little bit easier to cast opera for the opera house, because this way they know they have a particular type of in residence in their repertory company. But of course, it also one of the problems, as the title of Fock, pigeonhole, you have a tendency to get pigeonholed yourself if you're in the German theater, and it is very difficult to change from one category to the next, as perhaps your voice might change as you get older.
But it gives you an idea of the richness and the complexity of the world of opera. Lori, you're a mezzo soprano.
I'm a lighter mezzo soprano. I got a chance to do what are known as trouser roles. I got to sing a lot of boys' parts when I was doing opera.
And that, of course, comes from the castrata, which is a whole other subject.
That's a whole other show.
It's got to be, because we're out of time for this one. We want to thank today's guests, George Tepping, the executive director of the Wausau Conservatory of Music, and Lori Skelton, Wisconsin Public Radio classical music host. Thanks also to lyric opera singer Sally Stevens of Wausau, who appeared earlier in the program. I'm Glenn Moberg of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks to our executive producer, Rick Ryer, our on-air producer, Jane Ritger, our online producer, Scott Clark. Thanks also to Steve Johnston and the technicians at our Madison studio for making this show possible. A special thanks to Lori for today's musical selections by Bizet, Mozart, Puccini, Rossini, Verdi, and Wagner. That's it for us. Thanks for riding along with us today. Go to an opera. You'll enjoy us. Until next week. We're heading out of town.